Caution, the Mark Unger Show contains adult content intended for an adult audience. And besides that, he's really weird. Welcome to the Mark Unger Show with international marriage speaker and author of Laugh Your Way to a Better Marriage, Mark Unger. This is your source for practical, down-to-earth marriage advice without all the over-spiritualization or romantic nonsense. And now the host of the Mark Unger Show, Mark Unger.
Goes wild with delirious joy. They've joined the Mark Unger Show, the show that deals with all things concerning
marriage.
Indeed, I'm your host, the one and the only Mark Unger. Joining me, as always, the very lovely Lady Diane. Phil is still out recovering from surgery. The slacker, there's the empty chair. Here, show Diane that shot. There's Phil.
Yep, there's her.
Engineering the show as always, the very talented but eerily creepy Timothy Robert Ray, pushing buttons, twisting knobs, and trying to stay awake during this incomprehensibly, immeasurably boring show. This is the show that handles your marital challenges, relational conundrums, and dating dilemmas that you can email to us at ask@markgunger.com. What do you got today?
Okay, this article caught my eye. You know that book, I Kissed Dating Goodbye?
Yes.
Josh Harris apparently is now apologizing to Christians that he hurt when he advised against dating in his best-selling book. Uh-huh. He says, part of the reason this has been so hard for me is that I've had so much of my identity wrapped up in these books. It's what I'm known for. And it's like, well, crap. The biggest thing I've done in my life is it's a really huge mistake, he says.
Well, crap.
In I Kissed Dating Goodbye, he argues that traditional dating is a training ground for divorce because it puts people in the habit of quitting relationships when things get tough. The book, marketed to teenagers and 20-somethings, also discourages teen relationships and promotes courtship, a process in which a couple moves purposefully toward marriage with their parents' blessing and involvement as a better alternative to dating. Any kind of physical intimacy before marriage, the book argues, is a violation of the sacredness of married sexuality and could lead to lifelong regret.
Okay, so what part is he backpedaling on? Because if you take a look at this... traditional dating is training ground for divorce in a way that's kind of true.
Yep.
Because they're getting very close to someone, then they rip it apart, yep. So they're not happy.
Yes.
Okay, but what really drives that is when they become sexually active and they're really connected, and then they rip from that. So I think that was right. He discourages teen relationships. I would greatly disagree with that because I believe in marrying young. So he's going against that. If you're discouraging teen relationships, you're obviously... And that would really fit into a lot of parents. That's why so many parents and evangelical nitwits bought into this, because they don't like the idea of young marriage. So by discouraging that, then they got to wait well into their 20s before they start dating and stuff. And then the other stupid thing, the part I had the biggest problem with, always had the biggest problem with, was the idea of this courting nonsense where a boy has to go and ask the father's permission before he can even date the daughter, which means you're pretty much never going to get asked out on a date. In the 1800s, it was that way. I get that, but it was a different culture. And the reality is, you got to deal with the culture that you in which you live, and that would only increase the likelihood of Christian girls not finding spouses. Because if I had to go ask Deb's father before
just to go out on a date,
before I asked her,
yes,
that would be like no.
Yeah,
there's no way.
You just wouldn't.
So that was the part that irritated me the most.
So I think that's part of it, because a lot of this came off of a conversation that he got involved in on Twitter.
So, well, he said his biggest regret was, you know, people say, "Well, I never went to the prom," and seriously,
well,
who cares about the prom?
More than that, he says I wasn't allowed to have a prom because of Josh Harris, and he's apologizing. And then said somebody else tweeted, "Your book was used against me like a weapon," and then he again apologized. He said he's going to dig later into the book. Somebody said that they blamed the book for making her set the bar on relationships too high. that, you know, just expecting too
much. Well,
Grant,
I mean, that's...
Somebody else said, add me to your I Kissed Dating Goodbye victims, 37, never married, now infertile, set the bar too high.
See, that's the part I had a problem with, the delaying the marriage and making it so hard, and now they're, you know, it's too late for them to have families.
Yes. I think it was more about people who it's like, you have to wait, and we're not dating. It wasn't those rules of dating necessarily that people got hung up on. It was the not dating at all. And then they find themselves in their 30s and they didn't date and they're not married. I think that was more of what he was apologizing for.
He still believes in the mainstream evangelical sexual ethic that sex abuse are for marriage good.
But longer promotes a strict formula that can guarantee a happy outcome for relationships.
Well, good. I mean, I'm glad he repented of this thing because he was stupid.
He's stupid.
He was stupid.
Yeah.
But you know, I get one person being stupid.
Yeah.
There's a lot of individual stupid people out there. But when almost the core of evangelical Christianity bought into this to show that they're all stupid as an organization, as a culture, and as a religious group, that's disturbing to me.
Well, they buy into a lot of things in mass.
Yeah, I saw this when I saw him talking about this. I thought, you're a moron. As before, you know, as we were working on this documentary with this couple about young marriage, he's actually advocating young marriage, but then he closes the thing arguing for this courting thing, and that's when I disavowed the project. I wasn't going to have anything to do with it. I didn't never promote it to him. That's absurd. So I knew it was stupid from the get-go. Morons. Why do we buy into such stupid? I don't, you know, what's wrong with us? You know, I tell, you know, God, Lord, I love you, but you got the worst friends in the world, you know.
So what's
Jesus said, he calls us our friends. Your friends are really stupid, you know. I don't get it. How can people be so dumb?
I don't know. Do they think it sounds really holy and really spiritual at some point?
I guess.
I think some of this was the being set apart. We're called to be different. And so it was such an overreaction
to regular dating.
I think it was just such a strong overreaction to some of that.
Yeah, so.
But they're still making lists like you speak against, you know, lists of all of what I want and what he has to be. And,
yeah,
I mean, there's all
buy.
Sorts of stuff out there.
Get rid of his stupid book and buy my book. But see, the evangelical Christian community won't address, they won't grab onto my book like they grew ahead to his.
Well, because it's not so spiritual.
Because mine makes sense. And they're morons. So they want to ignore common sense because spirituality means you've got to be stupid. Honestly,
well,
I just
don't understand
it. Over-spiritualized
nonsense, as you call it.
All the ignorant.
Isn't that something that it can't be
so
logical?
Stupid.
It's
so
just
stupid.
Like there's something about that they think if it's really of God, it can't be logical. I don't know
what they think. No, I'm saying that's
I don't know what they think.
I think there's like we've glorified stupidity. The more stupid you are, the holier you got to be. Really?
Or the
Come
more
on.
Holy you are, the stupider you are.
The holier you are, the stupider you are. I don't know. Oh, is this, you got to get my permission and approach me first before you can even date my daughter. I guess that fed into the ego of some fathers.
Sure. Well, and it probably sounded very holy, very, you know, pure.
Just.
Very pure. Because that whole purity thing, you know, with the father-daughter balls and
no
all of
boy,
that.
In this culture, no boy on the planet is going to ask the father's permission to date a girl. There's no way, number one.
Well,
so that's why that's why they're single and 37 and can't have babies anymore, because that in and of itself is the stupidest part of it. That's the part that ticked me off the most. Talk about discouraging. Then this idea of don't have any teen relationships only means you're not going to have any young marriages because people aren't going to get. And that ticks me off. I'm all for the not having sex. I mean, that makes sense. And he's still advocating that, thankfully. But I just, I don't know. Stuff like that just gives me gas. All right. Enough of this. Thankfully, he repents. Let us applaud. He finally came to his sense. And you know how few people would have the cojones.
Well, and that's like what he said. When
admit,
this is what I'm known for, and now I have to say, it was crap.
Yeah, for him to say, you know, this is crap. That I mean, God bless the guy. He has a pair, and hopefully Christian community in general will take the book and throw it in the trash. All right. And instead, buy Mark Unger's book, Being Found. This is a commonsensical approach to dating and marriage. You can download it today at markgunger.com if you want to start reading it today. All right, we're going to take a break and be back with your emails right after this.
Have a marriage dilemma? Email your questions to ask@markgunger.com and Mark can answer them during one of our shows.
you. We're gonna party you the blues, your blue. Your body don't hesitate. It's on Main Street by the pearly gate.
There's a party going on.
Yeah,
there's a party going on.
There's a party going on. You wanna come along? It's a crime and on God.
The music of Jimmy Bradger. Check it out, jimmybradger.com. What do you got there?
He says, my wife and I listen to your podcast religiously, ooh, and I know how tired Mark gets about sex questions, but right. I have a question.
All right.
My wife and I dated for a year. We're engaged for 4 months. During our dating and engagement session, it seemed impossible to be able to keep our hands off each other. The
okay.
temptation was strong.
You think?
Hence why we didn't drag out our dating or engagement.
Uh-huh.
Yet, everything changed after we got married. We have sex about 3 times a week. Neither of us are complaining or sexually unsatisfied, but we have had discussions and think it's quite strange that we both had this high sex drive while dating, but it changed after marriage. My question is it normal? Because from what I heard, most newlyweds are intimate daily, if not multiple times a day.
How old are they?
Oh, gosh, I didn't ask that.
That would be an interesting question to ask. So, listen, 3 times a week is respectable.
He says we're still very attracted to each other, but we've lost the can't keep your hands off feeling. That's the question, is about that feeling.
Well, because you're meeting your sexual needs. Listen to what you're asking. It's like, man, before I ate that Thanksgiving dinner, I was so hungry. Man, I was starving. I couldn't hardly think. Then I ate it, and I'm not hungry anymore.
I don't have that.
I don't have that drive, the desire to sit and savor all the turkey and the stuffings in it. Because you ate already, you Nimrod, that's why. Yeah. So,
because it actually comes to fruition.
Yeah,
so therefore that isn't quite.
Now, here's my guess. Quit having sex for a month, and I bet you you'll go back to, all right? Well, how about you not do that and just enjoy being with each other? As for what you consider, what you hear about normal, yeah, that's probably the standard saying, but I know a lot, even a lot of young guys who get married. That's not what happens.
Not every day.
They don't know. They're not having sex all the time, every day and stuff.
3 times a week is pretty respectable, my friend.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I would say for a lot of couples, it's, you just go at it. Certainly was my experience.
Gosh, I don't know why you think that we have to know those details. For heaven's sake.
Absolutely,
more
man.
More information than we
Well, 100 years ago when we got married, it was, are you kidding me? We're young, energetic, finally got to be with each other. Everybody, march! Hi-ya! Why not? Why not? So that is true. I think probably the majority of people that is. But here's something really important for you to understand. Do not compare your sex life to other people's. Not even the standard normal, okay? Because it'll be frustrating to you because you'll hear all kinds of stuff. I was reading a letter once from a guy who said that they had sex 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone wrote, and they read this article that, you know, if you're not doing it 5-6 times a week, something's really wrong with you. And how they felt bad.
Yeah.
They were great. Other people, bad. Really? Stop.
Well, and we've had letters from people that say, oh, you know, it's supposed to be 3 times a week, and we want to do it every day. Or is there something wrong,
with us?
Because we're overstimulated or oversexed or whatever.
The thing is, you both got to get on the same page.
Yeah.
Look, I think on average, 2 to 3 times a week is normal, even into your 70s, 80s if you're healthy, 90s if you're really healthy. That's pretty normal, okay? But what your actual experience is now— if you have one spouse going crazy because the other one only wants to have sex once a month or once every other month, that's wrong. All right? On the other hand, if you got one who wants sex 3 times a day and the other one can only keep up 2 or 3 times a week, then that person who wants it so much is wrong. You know, the normal part is at least you get a point of reference. But beyond that, all that, quite frankly, if you and your spouse are thrilled to have sex once a week, go for it. I know a guy like that. Since the time he's in his 40s, him and his wife, to this day, he's in his 70s.
Just once a week.
Once a week.
Well, and there's people
and I think it's the same date every, and they're both happy as clams.
If they're both happy doing it twice a year, but the key is if you're both happy.
If you're both happy. That's the key. If you're both happy.
That's your normal.
If that's your normal, that's great. Wonderful. Yeah. Now, if you are having it three times a week and he's pressuring you to have it three times a day, now you got a problem. Okay, he needs to back off. Or if you want to have it, like I said, once every other month or once a month, and he's going crazy because he wants at least two, three times a week, then you need to step up because, again, the nice part of the normal is that's at least a point to reference when someone is, when there's tension.
Yes.
I think the normal only kicks in when there's conflict. Okay, does that make sense?
The people looking for what's normal, you mean?
No, I say the normal helps when there's conflict. Let's say somebody wants to have sex all the time and somebody hardly ever wants to.
Yeah.
Then look at what's normal.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a point of reference that you need to kind of draw towards that and work that out. But the truth of the matter is you're both happy. Great, you know. I met this guy one time. He's in Colorado. And his parents are, I think they're in their 70s or whatever. And he looks at me and says, of course, he's totally grossed out, disgusted by it. He says, they have sex every day.
They're 70.
I said, no. I said, I'm telling you, dude, every day. My father brags about
it. 70.
I said, really? And this guy, he's probably in his 30s or 40s. He's like, he's mortified because he can't even begin to keep up with that. But that's them.
That was their norm.
That's their norm.
Yeah.
And they both seem to be completely happy every day for 40, 50 years.
Yeah.
Every stinking day.
Yeah.
Well, okay, that's cool. But that's not normal.
No, that's not normal.
If you can, well, that's normal, and he's got.
That's, let's say it's their normal. It's not the average. Put it that way.
Yeah, it's their normal.
Not the average.
Yeah, it's not the average. I shouldn't say not normal.
It's not the average.
It's not the average. I think the average whatever is only helpful as a point of reference to people who are having conflict.
Yes.
Okay, because the average is this 2 to 3 times a week, and if you're way more than that or way less than that, then the other person who's unhappy has a point.
Yes.
And then you got to wrestle that up. So anyway, dear, you're fine. If you're a couple, I talked to another guy on his wedding. I mean, on their honeymoon, his wife says, "I'm 2 or 3 days into it. Do I have to do this every day?"
Oh, whoops!
I would have been devastated.
Whoops!
He wasn't devastated, and he just had to back out. They were fine. They laugh about it to this day.
Well,
I'm thinking, thank God I didn't marry this woman. You're in your honeymoon, your 2 or 3 days.
I have to do this all
and her
time.
Comment is, do I have to do this every day?
Oh
man, well, that sucks.
Because
I'm thinking, you're only doing it once a day? I mean, it sucks to be you. And to hear that from the woman you just married.
And they were young.
They were young. Yes.
It was at a very, yeah.
Oh, that's depressing. And they worked it out and he seemed to be fine with it. Again, they laugh about it. Well, that's how I even heard the story.
Yeah.
I wasn't asking. How often did you use to do it? I mean, I don't even know why it came up.
Yeah.
All I know is that he told me, you know, it's funny. You know, and she said, we got to do this
so
every day.
So it didn't devastate him.
I would have been devastated. I promise you. I would have been mortified beyond. But they weren't. And their normal is whatever they do. I didn't ask. Don't want to know.
Don't want to know. Don't ask. Don't tell.
Happy as clams, they're at least, they got to be pushing 35 years into the marriage at this point.
Wow. They worked it out.
So I don't know. But yeah, normally or on average, when people first get married, they go at it like rabbits. Yeah. I was just really more like lions. The lions have sex like, what is it? When they're in heat. It's like 100 times a day
they
or something.
They do?
Oh, yeah, something insane.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, you have to Google it. It's like insane.
I didn't know that. I learned something new today.
They go at it like crazy people. Rabbits is nothing. Lions.
Today.
How they, yikes. I remember we were in the wild in Africa and we were doing a safari and we stumbled in onto a lion and a lioness doing the wild thing.
Yeah.
And he just looked up at her, rah, and just growling. Like, oh, you know, but he left us alone. He was very busy, you know. Apparently they do this. We're gonna take a break. I'm going to Google this and give you the information.
Oh my gosh.
When I come back from the break, should this be buttoned up here?
It's fine. It's fine unbuttoned.
I don't like the unbuttoned look. I look like a bum.
No, it looks fine.
We will be back as we debate lions and buttons right after this.
Mark Gunger. Yeah, we've got an app for that. Download your free Mark Gunger app today.
Sounds so simple, and it's just a game.
All right, we're back. Mark Gunger Show. I went with a button. I look like Pee Wee Herman now.
Yeah, I like it.
I like a bit of like this.
Well, we have a difference of opinion on that.
You got to look at me, therefore, I'm going with...
There you are.
Oh, that floppy thing drives me crazy. Okay. So, and lions up to 40 to 60 times a day. Yeah, and it's debated about...
40 to 60 times
yeah,
a day.
Yeah, yeah. It's rather robust, to say the least. My goodness.
It's like 3 times an hour.
Yeah. And, you know, are these over very I presume they're just very quick.
Oh, sure.
Encounters, boom, that's it, you know. So even still, that's impressive.
I guess
anyway,
so.
All right.
So I have a question for you about this. You're saying what's normal and all that, people, if they hardly ever have sex.
Well, I like the average versus normal.
Okay, average. Yeah. So that's average. It just made me think of something that you were saying the other day. Well, that, what's his name? The one from 200 years ago that you quote all the time.
Yes,
the
yes. Adam Clark.
Adam Clark, when he talks about when someone ends up committing adultery because they haven't been sexually faithful to their spouse.
Yeah, he argues that, and I agree with him, that the person who starves out the other person sexually and then that person eventually has an affair, that the spouse who was starving him out is guilty of the affair.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
You never hear that today.
No,
oh, man. But I agree with him 100%.
And he uses that term alienation of affection. You know,
yes.
And that just popped into my mind this whole previous discussion to the break. If you're not having very much sex with the person you're married to, gosh, isn't that tough on a relationship? I mean, doesn't that end up in this alienation? I mean, I'm sure some people can figure that out, but
no,
don't you want to have that connection to the person that you're married to?
Look, some people get married, they don't want to have sex at all.
Then what's the point?
I know.
And how do you
because
have that
they listen to some idiot on Christian radio talk about marriage is about being one in the spirit.
I mean, I get it. You can still
Lord.
Love somebody and be very connected to them without it, but gosh, doesn't it help?
According to Paul, if you're not interested in sex, you shouldn't even get married.
Yeah.
How Christians say, Christians get mad at me when I say marriage is about getting sex. You should see the fits they have. Really? Explain to me the Bible then. Because Paul said, if you ain't burning up, stay single. So it's the essential reason for it. Why people who are not interested get married, I have no idea. But they're the ones who make somebody miserable. Absolutely miserable. Because the other person does want to have sex. So, I don't know. People are crazy. One thing's for sure, I'll always have a job. We'll be back right after this.
Caution, the Mark Unger Show contains adult content intended for an adult audience.
The Son of God came walking one night out on the water, what a frightening sight. Folks in the boat thought he was a ghost when Peter said to Jesus,
come on, get out the boat.
You are listening to and or watching The Mark Unger Show as I'm trying to fix my earpiece here. Talking about love, marriage, and relationships. Diane and myself. Phil is still recovering from the groans of
surgery
learning you're not
shoulder.
As young as he used to be. Mm-hmm. All right, so you want to really go on a...
Go ahead.
Rabbit trail or something.
Go ahead.
So... Paul said, because there's so much sexual immorality, mm-hmm. every man should have his own wife. Mm-hmm. Everyone. So if you're burning up, you should get married. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't the Bible tell him to suck it up? Consider it, that's your cross to bear.
I don't know.
Hmm? All right. Now, a guy gets married, and it's with a woman, we'll use a woman. Sometimes it's the guy. Actually, I get more complaints about it being the guy. So just so you know that, just in my mind, it's just for what? For our example, marries a woman who doesn't ever want to have sex. Now what's he supposed to do?
Because the answer is,
you know what Christians,
suck it up.
That's what Christians say to him, but that doesn't make any sense. Because they'll say, well, you're supposed to suck it up, and that's your cross to bear. That's what they tell him.
Oh. I know.
All the time. Okay, now, if that's a legitimate answer, why wasn't that the answer in the first place?
That's a really good question.
See?
That's a really good question.
See, now, y'all listen to me. You know, if you're a non-Christian, you're not going to care. So we got a lot of non-Christians that listen to us, but most of our audience is Christian. At the end of the day, you have to live with your church and with their rules and their judgments, and that's fine. The Bible actually talks about the church making rulings and judgments. Mm-hmm. Do you know why? Because the Bible doesn't give you answers for everything.
Yeah.
It gives you principles. It gives you a lot of black and white, and then all the shades of gray. You got to make decisions, and you got to make judgments. Oftentimes, as individuals, we have to make judgments. Mm-hmm. What's appropriate? What's not appropriate? What's okay? And it varies for people. And then oftentimes, the church has to get involved. And Paul, at one point, wrote to the Corinthian church at the beginning of 1 Corinthians and rails on them for failing to step up and make the judgments. He says, don't you realize we're going to judge angels someday? Now, we would think, well, that's different. When we're in heaven, we'll think differently. He doesn't act like it's there anything different. Mm-hmm. He says, if you can't make judgments now, what makes you think you'll make judgments then? He really ties the two much closer together. It's really stunning when you think about it. So he just gets on them. You know, he's even the dumbest guy among you should be able to make these judgments. In fact, he actually says, get the person of the lowest stature in the church and let them make the judgment, implying that anybody should be able to do it. You know, a group of men and women, or in their case, clearly it was men, I should be able to get together and make judgments concerning about conflicts and stuff like that sort of thing. So at the end of the day, you have to live with you and your church and whatever. Some churches believe there's never a situation where there can be divorce and remarriage. Catholics are basically that way, unless they get annulled, you know. But they believe marriage is insoluble. You can never get rid of it. But that's inconsistent with the teaching of Jesus. Because he clearly said, except for in the case of fornication, which people argue about what that means. Some people say, well, that's fornicating before you got married. No, I don't think so. You know, I don't know. And they'll say, well, because once you have sex with someone, then you become one with that person. Well, that's the case. And what a deal where Paul talks about being, because he wrote to them in 1 Corinthians about being with prostitutes and stuff. Don't you realize that when you're a prostitute, you're one with that prostitute? But he never said, that's what made you married. Otherwise, they'd be married to all those guys.
Good point.
All right?
Good point.
All right. So, and then he says, you know, if the unbelieving person depart, good grief.
Like, are you going to die?
Dying here. We're all dying very slowly, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Where if the unbelieving person leaves, then the believing one is not bound anymore. Okay? And everybody argues all these different things out. All we know are these principles. Then there's all the shades of gray that come at you, mm-hmm. and churches need to make calls and stuff like that. I'm of the opinion in my life, now you have to understand, everything about my life is trying to help people succeed in relationships, to avoid divorce. I am not a believer in divorce. I don't advocate it. I don't quick jump to just divorce or anything like that. Everything we do is to avoid that, okay? So don't misunderstand what I'm about to say. But I am to the point now, after looking at all of this stuff, I am absolutely and personally convinced. Now, in every situation, that's why even in our church, you have to come before the elders of the church, the presbyter of the church. You got to make your case. We got to balance it because there's always, that's the gray that we got to wrestle mm-hmm. out. But generally speaking, I'm out of the opinion, after these many years, that when someone refuses to have sex with the other person or starts the other person out, they are now, in essence, sexually unfaithful and deserving of a divorce, in my opinion, and remarriage. Because I think, no, the other person's supposed to suck it up. If you're supposed to suck it up, how come we weren't supposed to suck it up in the first place?
Right.
Because all you're doing is creating a scenario that the other person's going to sin. And how is our answer to tell someone just to suck it up until they eventually fall into sin and commit adultery or sleep with somebody else's wife and destroy that family? That's our answer? Our answer is Christian people of faith, that we got to wait until someone actually goes out and does something horrible, and then we forgive them?
Then there's so much destruction there.
And it's absurd, because if anybody does that, at the end of the day, we know as Christians, we have to do what? We have to forgive them.
Yeah.
I just don't think our approach to this problem of sexless marriages is to tell the other person to suck it up, and it's too bad, and it's your cross to bear, and you can't get a divorce because that's what the Bible says, and that's not what the Bible says. So anyway, I'm really of the opinion at this point that when you are in that situation, the other person is sexually unfaithful. And like the theologian from 200 years ago, Methodist theologian Adam Clark, who says he believes that the in such a case, it's the spouse that starved him out is the one who's responsible for the affair in the first place, leading to alienation of affection. So this idea of sexless marriages or virtually sexless marriages is absurd, and I think we should be confronted in the strongest of terms. And in my opinion, you come to me, again, you got to go to your church, you got to deal with the rules. If they say never, ever, then that's your church. That's what you got to do. I'm saying in my church, someone comes to me and tells me so-and-so is starving me out and they won't be sexual with me and they won't be my spouse. To me, that is grounds for divorce. And they're acting like unbelievers. They're blatantly disregarding the Bible. The Bible says a man should not withhold from his wife and a wife should not withhold from her husband. Well, I totally disagree with it. Well, you can't do that. You can't just pick and choose. So to answer this whole thing about sexuality, yeah, you guys need to get on the same page. You need to work this out. But this idea that you get to, and some spouses do that, literally will starve out the other person. I'm just not going to have sex anymore. Well, as far as I'm concerned, you have violated the marriage vow at that point. You are no longer faithful. You know what faithful means? You're always there. You can always be dependent. You know what they call a faithful employee? One that always shows up, no matter what. They're the most faithful employee I have. It has nothing to do with their emotions. It has nothing to do with their knowledge. It doesn't even have anything to do with how good they are at their job. When someone says, they're the most faithful employee I have, everybody knows exactly what you're saying. They're always there. When everybody else is calling in sick, they're there. When everybody else is taking off time, they don't. They're there. They don't take personal days. They are the most faithful. Everybody immediately knows. That's what it means to be faithful. You're always there. You're always available. And all of a sudden you get in a situation where you're no longer available to the other person and you cut them out because of whatever stupid issue you got. You're no longer faithful, in my opinion. Say, well, there's circumstances you don't know about. Okay, that's where you would need to come to your church, if you were at our church, and you'd have to make your case, and we'd all, and you know, again, you have to take all the shades of gray. That's why we got to make calls. In some instances, we may not agree with that and say, yeah, you know, you do need to suck it up. You know, she's on chemo, and so, you know, she's not going to be able to be a lover to you. Mm-hmm. Now you need to suck it up, buttercup. You know what I'm saying? So it all has to do with, there's all these shades of gray that never end. But I'm just saying, as a general starting point, that you got to sell me past, you decide you're no longer going to have sex with your spouse, you are sexually unfaithful. And as far as I'm concerned, that person has every right to dump your rear end and find someone who will be faithful. Say, well, we disagree with that. Well, fine. Then, you know, go to your church, and I'm not trying to tell you to do anything. You got to live with your church. I'm just saying this is the way that I view this, because it's highly inconsistent to go to someone now who's in a sexless marriage, and as most evangelical Christians, pastors, and elders will tell them now, you need to suck it up, buttercup. It's your cross to bear. Wait a minute. How come that wasn't their cross to bear in the first place? Paul said we need to get them with someone to avoid sexual immorality.
And then you put them with somebody, and they end up in sexual immorality.
And that exactly. So they start them out. Then they end up, because you tell them to suck it up, they end up in sexual immorality. So that's our situation. Our call is now to wait till we've got to be better than putting people in a situation where they're going to wind up committing adultery anyway, and then now we can forgive them. I just think it's all absurd. Anyway, it's a mess. Look, divorce is a trip to hell. Anybody that's ever been to it will tell you. The vast majority of cases, that never needs to happen. And everything's about me avoiding that scenario altogether. But when I get into these situations where someone just says they're no longer going to have sex with their spouse, man, you are as unfaithful and illegitimate as far as I'm concerned. And I think the other spouse has every right to kick you to the curb. My personal opinion, don't write me if you're not happy with that. Just be grateful you don't come to my church. But I don't see how people get around this. I don't see how they come up with these other...
Well, it's actually quite brilliant. The answer wasn't suck it up ahead of time. I've never heard you say that. So that really strikes me. It's very brilliant.
He said, very brilliant. He doesn't tell them suck it up in the first place.
No.
And he says, they're going to go into sexual marriage. That's why you should have a spouse.
Yes.
To stop the immorality, yes. Paul says. To stop the immorality. He said, you need to pray more. You need to fast more. You need to read the Bible more. You need to have accountability groups. You need to hold hands with other people so you can't masturbate. Whatever the stupid things that people come up with. He doesn't say, he says, the answer to the immorality, get a husband, get a wife. And all of a sudden, they're in a situation where they're right back where they started. Now we tell them, you need to suck it up, buttercup. It's absurd. Because if that works then, it would have worked at the beginning, as far as I'm concerned. And some people say, no, the marriage covenant oversees all that, and you're stuck for life. And okay, that's your church. That's their call. You got to live with them. I just think at that point, you are now unfaithful and deserved to be kicked to the curb. Unless there's extenuating circumstances. And then again, make your case.
Yeah, talk about it.
As to why. All right. And even then, there's still other things you can do to help a person out.
Exactly.
There is. For some reason, you can't physically. You can still. You can't just all of a sudden ignore the sexual needs of your spouse. That is unbiblical. Of this, there is no doubt. All right. Enough of that pontificating. We'll take a break and come back, I presume, with another email.
Yes.
Right after this.
Want more of Mark? Visit markgunger.com. There you will find everything that Mark has to offer.
I think Jimmy wrote this for our show.
Did he?
Was the band that, remember?
Yeah, Lord Make Me Funky.
Yeah, Lord Make Me Funky. Jimmy Bratcher. Check out his music at jimmybratcher.com.
Love Jimmy.
All right.
She says, I heard your comments about setting the ground rules or ultimatums and was wondering about whether I should stop asking my husband to cut down or quit drinking. My husband is not saved and he drinks beer every day. And I have asked him, begged him, got angry at him for drinking. He most of the time only eats once a day after he's drinking, so he must be drinking pretty heavily. I'm concerned about his health. He thinks that because he goes to get a quarterly checkup at the doctor, he has a clean bill of health. It's okay to keep drinking as long as the doctor doesn't say otherwise. So she wants to know if that's okay for her to give him an ultimatum.
Number one, was he drinking before you married him?
She says they were both unsaved when they got married, and he was drinking, but only weekends. She since has become a Christian, although he has not. And now he's starting to drink every day.
I don't know. Again, this is where the church would need to make calls. You get to kill your pastors. But most churches don't have any testicles. They're the ballless. They're the ballless church. They should have signs of, we're the ballless church. Because they won't get involved and won't make decisions. So that's why people email me. Because they can't get churches to just focus for more than 10 seconds to make any calls. The only thing they'll sit there and argue about is the color of the carpeting or, you know, whatever. But seeing how she's asking for advice, in my situation, I don't think that is actionable.
Actionable not for a divorce, but is it actionable to kick his butt out?
Everybody's got to draw their line in the sand on what they think is something they cannot tolerate. But in my situation, I don't see. First of all, she says she's concerned about his health. Who goes in quarterly for physicals?
That's a good point.
So a doctor is giving him a clean bill of health at a quarterly level, and you're still whining about his health? I think you're a little nuts. I mean,
what else can you... Who gets quarterly checkups?
Who gets quarterly checkups?
Something's not right. Something's not right there.
If his doctor's saying he's fine, and if he drinks beer every day, you know, and how much... See, we don't know the situation. Yeah. That's the grays, people. That's the grays. Someone drinks beer every day, doesn't...
And if you drink one beer every day, or if you drink a 12-pack every day, that's an entirely different matter.
Absolutely right. Or if you drink two 12-packs every day.
Right. It's a totally
different matter. And all day long, a 6-pack?
Yeah.
I don't know. Look, and, you know, you go on these websites to decide whether or not you're an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Almost everybody's an alcoholic. I mean, they're really extreme. They just react ridiculously.
Yeah. If you drink one glass of wine a night at supper every day,
you're an alcoholic. You know, and it's just absurd. So, I don't know. I think you need somebody in your life who can get close to you and really ask all these details. I can't. All I'm based on my initial reaction to her is I don't know why she's making a big. And here's a guy too. He doesn't have God in his life. What do you expect a person without God to do? To enjoy the lack of peace in his life?
Right.
Right?
And if she's become a Christian, which I've seen this, where once the wife becomes a Christian, suddenly now, even though he's not drinking a ton, any drinking, depending on what kind of church she's in, could be a big deal to her.
Yeah, she has a fit.
Yeah.
I've seen Christian women get mad because their unsaved husband doesn't tithe.
Well.
Of all the ignorant things on earth, you're mad because your unsaved husband doesn't want to give 10% of his income to some God he doesn't believe in.
Right.
Are you insane?
Yes.
Leave him alone.
Yes, they are.
They are insane.
They are insane.
You're married to a guy who's not a believer. Life doesn't have a whole lot of meaning to him. Is he faithful to you? Is he a provider for you? Does he protect your home? Is he a lover to you? Well, then enjoy that. Well, he drinks beer every day. Who cares? Who cares?
Yeah.
What difference? What has got a bad health? Apparently not. If he's getting quarterly checkups from his doctor and saying he's fine.
I don't even know who goes once a quarter.
And by the way, sweetheart, there's a difference between a beer and a bottle of scotch.
Yeah.
I know guys who drink a bottle of scotch every day.
Yeah.
It's destroying their liver. They're on the verge of death. We have a mutual friend like this. He's still going. And he told me the other day he's still drinking like crazy again. I think, aren't you supposed to be dead? I mean, he's supposed to have been dead years ago.
From drinking?
Yeah. Just killing himself. Okay, hard liquor like that, just slamming it, drinking to oblivion where they can't even function. It's different than a guy who has beers every day.
Yeah.
Well, it's all even long. He's drinking beers every day, all day long. What kind of job does he have that he can drink a beer all day long? I presume when he comes home, he drinks a beer.
Yeah.
You know, is he drunk? And there again, people do.
She didn't mention that. She just says he's drinking beers.
Is he drunk?
Like, if I was writing and he was actually drunk, I would use the word drunk. So I'm assuming, which I probably not be assuming.
I think she's just being anal. That's my personal opinion. My response to this is, and now if she came back with more details, which we would have if she was coming to our Presbyterian church to make her case before us, we would ask all these questions. But again, most churches have no huevos. They're huevoless churches.
Huevoless.
We are the church of the huevoless. I would say we're the church of the huevos. Oh. We have huevos. We are the church of the huevos. You want to come in and really get a group of men who love God, who will sit down and wrestle through with your situations and listen and help you make decisions and judgments. That's what I think churches are supposed to do. What irritates me is the vast majority. And when I say the vast majority, I'm talking it's got to be 95% more who will never do it.
Well,
they won't.
They
won't get involved. They won't talk about these things. So anyway, in our case, based on what we're showing here, if he's not drunk, and you have to understand, well, he drinks all. First of all, if I drank a six pack every day, I probably would get drunk. To someone who drinks a six pack of it every day, they don't get drunk.
Yeah,
they're functioning alcoholics. Well, he's technically an alcoholic. Okay, the Bible doesn't say if your husband's an alcoholic, you can divorce him. So I thought you were just talking about this because the Bible does say about sexual
immorality.
Immorality is grounds for divorce. But you think people in the Bible never had people who drank?
Oh, sure they did.
No, maybe it never existed until just in the 1900s.
No.
You mean there were people in the Bible times who actually drank?
Yes.
Then how come the Bible never one time says drinking is grounds for divorce?
Because it's not.
So I would tell her to stuff it. That's what I'm telling. That's my advice. My advice is, I'll tell you what. Instead of you confronting your unsaved husband and making him feel worse and threatening to leave him because he has a certain thing that he does that you don't like or your church disagrees with, how about you actually love the man and be kind to him and live the kind of example that perhaps he can find Christ? How about instead of focusing on his drinking, you focus on his heart? Because maybe if he comes to Christ and really gets saved, he'll realize, I don't need the drinking. Because now he can be filled with the peace of God, and he doesn't have to drink to find peace. Right? I mean, that's what your focus should be. You're going to leave him because he drinks beer every day? Stop. Does he beat you when he's... well, that's different. Does he get, he can't drive a car and he's... okay, that's different.
Drinking and drunk are two entirely different things.
Absolutely. We do got to go. We're really late. We're okay, got a break. We'll be back right after this.
Attend Mark's Laugh Your Way to a Better Marriage event. Visit laughyourway.com for upcoming dates and locations.
I require no invitation for quiet walks and rendezvous.
I require no invitation to just stick my face in your life.
What?
It's the word he's thinking. He's thinking of applying to me. Okay, so anyway, what were we talking about? I don't remember anymore.
The woman wanting to divorce her husband because he drinks beer.
It doesn't, there's no biblical place that talks about divorcing someone because, now again, I talk about confronting really bad behavior. Mm-hmm. And I'm not backing off of that. I mean, if to you're the point, you can't handle it, but you're asking me what I think. I would not make a deal. I would try and win the boy over to Jesus, what I try to do. You know? I mean, it's not because unless the drinking is doing something.
If it's destructive.
If he's beating you, if he's gambling all the money away, if he's going to prostitutes because he's drunk. I mean, okay. But just drinking in and of itself is not evangelically an approved way of life. But it is certainly nothing that rises to the level of, I think, what you're talking about, in my opinion. You want to know my opinion? That's my opinion. This show is just about what I think. Whether you agree with it or not is your own business. All right, you guys, we'll see you again next time.